Good evening, everyone. Lovely to see you all. In so many different places, and I'm in a different place than usual, so it's also very special. It's very healthy to change places. And it's been, so as you know, since Saturday evening, I've been in Lisbon, and it's been an experience of what artists call negative capability, which comes from Keats, John Keats, who said it's that negative capability is the capacity of being in uncertainties, doubts, mysteries, and that's where the creative capacity arises, in this negative capability. And Allen Ginsberg and the Beat Poets were big on negative capability. But it applies to all of life. And so coming to a city that is strange, but not so strange because I've been here a lot in Lisbon. I know basically the lay of the land and neighborhoods generally where they are, at least the central areas. In a language that I'm familiar with but have not mastered, in a country too that I know from being here so much in the past 20 years and spending so much time with all of you, in a new home, quote, an apartment that is not mine, that I don't know, but that I was told a lot about because the friend who owns it is in Paris, is from Ghana, and told me about the apartment, people who had been in this apartment. Claudia, for example, has been in this apartment. So I had heard various things. I am familiar with some aspects, but ultimately, coming and being here and now is a completely different story, as we know. Direct experience is very different than looking at pictures, reading maps, hearing stories, making plans, very different. And without really thinking too much about this decision that I made, which I made in July, actually, to come and do this, I just followed something in me that was saying, do this. I didn't really know why. Of course, I knew some reasons. The main pretext was I had this translation to finish, and I had this writing I want to get to, and I want to spend time with the Portuguese Sangha. Those were all the pretext. But actually, it's something very deeper than that. It's to really plunge into this negative capability of not knowing. Not even knowing who I am here. Because here, I'm not who I am in my home. I don't know who I am out there. I don't know who I am in this apartment. Even more strongly than, yeah, I don't know who I am. But this is like really throwing everything up in the air. And so I had this experience this afternoon where, from my windows, I have this great view of the rooftops, and I'm on a hill, so it's probably hard not to be on this one, but or near a hill. And so from my windows, I can see all these things and amazing sunlight. And yesterday morning, these church bells, there's church bells that ring all the time, every quarter hour. And up high, I can see this church, and there's another, like, you know, a viewpoint up there with some amazing trees. So I've been at him. So I asked João yesterday, we went for a walk, and I said, so is that Graça? And because Eleonor, who owns the apartment, has said to me, yeah, you know, telling me places to go for shops and things. She said, well, you can go up to Graça, but it's quite a climb. It's close, but it's very steep. So I was just assuming that must be Graça. And João was like, yeah, I don't know. I think so, you know, but from this angle, because we were seeing it from a different angle. And so I was looking at maps, you know, in these winding streets where I live and everything. It's kind of hard to even figure out which direction I'm facing. My windows, one is one way, one's the other way. And so finally I just said, okay, this afternoon, absolutely magnificent afternoon. The weather here is just a blessing. You know, it's like 22 degrees, brilliant sun, crystal blue sky. I don't have the appropriate clothing because I came from winter in Paris, right? So I'm like down to two t-shirts and that's about it. You know, otherwise everything's too warm. So I just said, no, I'm just going to go out there and see. So I go out and I turn the way that I think it must be, looking at the map. And it was, you know, fortunately we have our cell phones. And so I can see if I'm going in the right direction or not. So I, you know, made my pilgrimage, you know, I made my direct experience of walking up Graça Hill on a marvelous sunny afternoon. You know? And I could not have known that by hearing stories, reading books, looking at the map, looking out my window. I couldn't know the experience of being there when I'm here. And I couldn't see what here looks like when I'm here, but I could see what I think I could. Well, maybe I couldn't really see my building, but I could see vaguely the area rather from up there. And every step, I could experience every single step. Something I could not possibly know from sitting here looking or asking questions or hearing about it. And so I discovered a neighborhood I've never been to in Lisbon. I don't know how that happened, that I had never been in Graça, but I never had been. Discovered this church, different viewpoints, park. I didn't have a lot of time, so I couldn't wander around too much, but I wandered around a bit. Enough to say, oh, I'll come back. And enough to say, this is direct experience of Graça. It doesn't matter if it's Graça or Alfama or the river. It doesn't matter. It's direct experience of it was what was important. And because I didn't know it, it was easier for me to rest in that negative capability of uncertainties, of the mysterious, to be able to see things completely new because I didn't know them before. Which is basically my experience moment to moment here to some extent, because it's a completely, my life is nothing like it is at home. And yet, it's exactly what it's like at home. I mean, I sleep and I eat and I'm coming to my Zen activities online. It's my life, you know, this is my life, as we say. the length of my days. But living it, pulling oneself out of our ideas and concepts and certainties helps us to better meditate upon it. I'm quoting the song that we sing. This is my life, the length of my days. Day and night, I meditate upon it. And I can truly meditate upon it here. And I think that's part of why I gave myself this, why I did this. I'm still not clear on it. I really don't know the depth of it. But that's part of it. And it also helps to see how our certainties, how we become fixed with those certainties about who we are, and then about who the others are, and about what place is my neighborhood, my house, my cats. When we arrived, Sue was pointing out that downstairs in front of my building, there are these two little cat houses. In the neighborhood, people have made little houses for the cats, for the street cats, I guess, the wild cats. So she pointed out these two little houses downstairs. I have not seen the cats, but it looks like, they seems to be taken care of, so the cats must come there. And she said, so, one's for Muji and one's for Nala, who are my cats at home, right? And so, can I not be fixed on my ideas about my cats, my names for my cats, and say, okay, these can be my cats for a month. And in fact, they're not even my cat. My cats are not even my cats. We're all part of the moment that we're spending together. And we're just different phenomenons of the same, what we call mood. And we're just different manifestations of it, and we share it together. We're part of this process that is living together. And if we can see things as part of a process, then, wow, that changes our idea of a separate identity. Last week I had this experience of in the Healthy Boundaries course that I teach for Buddhist leaders online, and which I also led in our Sangha, a brief version of it, but so Friday night was the final meeting, online meeting for this course after 5 weeks. And in the group of like, so I think there were 12 students and three instructors. Among the 12 students, among the three instructors, there were two white females and one white male. Among the 12 students, there were two white males, two women of Asian heritage, one being Dutch but of Indonesian heritage, and one being whose father was Japanese and whose mother was Jewish and who was born and raised in America. Complex intersection of identities there, right? And everybody else was white female, right? So the last woman I mentioned at our meeting on Friday became very angry and said we were all in denial of our white privilege and didn't see how that affected our relationship to power. That she sat here looking at this Zoom screen of all these white faces and no one was owning their white privilege or even looking at it. I was really deeply touched by this, that she said this. And we had been talking about blind spots, and I said to everyone, you know, she has just pointed out an enormous blind spot for all of us here on the screen. And I'm grateful that she did, and I think we should acknowledge how much courage it took to say that, to speak to power, to speak to this situation. I just say this because the context that puts in what follows in context. She then, after the meeting, sent emails to the coordinator saying she was very angry, and she thought the course was, you know, not well done and not humane, and that we all needed to look at the issues. And she has some points. But she pointed out an article that we should all read, and I did read it, from a Black man who is a Lama in the Tibetan tradition and who talks about intersectionality and how identity is about intersections of various identities that we have. So he said, I identify as a Black, queer, cisgender male, what was the other thing? Oh, of mixed class, something else. These are just the standard categories we have for identifying. We use this in our course too. I may have shown it to you too. Power is racially, socially, culturally, economically, class-based. So, any case, I thought this was interesting of his intersectionality position. Because it points to this fragmented nature of our identity. We are not any one of those things, and yet we are all of those things. And we are those things in relation to others too. So we have an intersection with others. We can say that England is England because it's not Scotland and Wales, or Portugal is Portugal because it's not Spain. The land is the land because it's not the ocean. It all happens in relation as well, right? So there's all these intersections. And if we hang on to one, well, then we miss all the others. When I was walking up Grassa Hill, if I had been fixed on one path or one stone, you know, as you know, in Lisbon, the sidewalks are made of all these little stones. I mean, throughout Portugal, but because it's where I am here. All of these little stones. If I fix on one of them, well, I can't move. And if my objective is to reach one of them, well then, and they're small. So if I try to stay on one of them, it's impossible. There's not room for even maybe two toes on one of those stones. And our identity is like that. It's exactly like the pavement. What did Juan tell me what it is? Calcada? No, calzada. Calzada, right? Yeah. It's exactly what it is. You know? And he showed me yesterday the calzada of Amalia Rodriguez, which is kind of a curve like this. So it's this image of someone, of a person, made with all these little stones, you know, like a mosaic. That's who we are. I mean, that really is a true reflection of who we are. And sitting on our cushion is a great example, a great opportunity to look at that. As we see our breath rising and falling, as we see our thoughts arising and falling, as the moment the clock is ticking on, the light is changing. Well, how could all of that change but not me? How could all of that be impermanent, not fixed, but not me? Krisha is sharing the image of the calzada of Naya Rodriguez, I think. Yeah. It's really very basic, you know, when we think about it. If we can think outside the box of our usual thinking, right? Negative capability. Of entering into that space of uncertainty, where things aren't fixed. And we see where what happens when things are fixed. You know, we end up with deep beliefs, deep convictions, deep divisions, deep harm, as we see in our world today. I read a little thing today about a veteran, an American former soldier, veteran, who sewed a rakusu out of camouflage. You know, the, I don't know if you would say that in Portuguese, you know, the clothing that the soldiers wear that so they can't be seen. Do you have a word for that in Portuguese?
Yeah, it's a camuflado.
Yeah. Oh, same. Okay. Same.
Yeah.
Must have a Latin root. Right? So, and so he sewed his rakusu out of that. And his teacher wrote on the back, "Wind-blown dust falling like rain." So dust that is blown by the wind falling like rain. And the soldier said, "I think that is the most concise description of war that I have ever seen." Concise means, you know, very compact, right on, you know, limited amount of words, minimum amount of description, very direct, of war. So I thought about that. So the wind-blown dust, you know, could we see it like the dust that is blown up? We are, our actions are the wind. And with our actions, we're blowing up this dust. We're raising this dust, creating this conflicts, creating the killing, the harm, and the despair, and hopelessness, and the anger, and the rage, and everything. And the dust just falls like rain. As if to reflect the pointlessness of it, pointlessness of this, it's just dust falling. It doesn't mean that it's, we shouldn't think about it, we shouldn't take care of it, but it just means, can we see the pointlessness of it? That it's just like rain falling. The killing is, the devastation we're creating, is pointless. Why do we do that? You know, and we do that because of our certainties. We're so sure. We're so convinced. We're so deeply entrenched. We don't see this, you know, the fragmented nature of things, of all things. we don't have the direct experience of just this. Unfortunately, I was not in the study group on Saturday, but it was a wonderful text, and I hear that you all had a wonderful discussion. And it really is that simple. Really is that simple. And yet difficult, because we are so deeply entrenched, and we can, I can see coming here. I was telling my family last night on my weekly Zoom call with my American family, that I was having some feelings like I had when I first came to France. When I went to, I had scholarship in a city in the middle of France where I'd never been before. I didn't know anybody. I didn't really speak the language. I'd studied it, but I couldn't speak it. Again, I'd studied it. I could read it. I could read Proust, but I couldn't get a word out of my mouth, and I couldn't understand what people were saying to me. And so I had to delve into the uncertainty to experience it, right? And at that time, I was 21. I wasn't scared at all. I didn't even think about it. I had the same feeling that I had coming here of I didn't even really think about it. I didn't think of the implications. I didn't think about what I was doing really. And people would say to me, "Oh, you're so brave," and, "Oh, wow, that's incredible you're going to do that." I didn't think of it like that at all. I didn't even think about it. And I had the same feeling here. Not that people were saying you're so brave, but I had that same feeling coming here of being in this new place and doing something, delving into the unknown. I almost felt like I was 21 again because it was a very similar experience. And we can have those experiences. We don't have to go to a new city. We don't have to go to a foreign country. Of course, shifting out of our daily experiences helps. And that's part of why we do retreats, right? We leave our homes, we leave our usual habits, our ways of doing things, the food we eat, the times we sleep, where we sleep, how we dress, our activities, we change all that. In order to like shake the tree, like, during our retreat, like in the summer, when at Tiago's place, when during summer they went out and shook the orange tree, and that's what we had for breakfast. We don't know what will fall, right? But we can shake it. We can shake that tree by sitting. By sitting still, we shake the tree. It sounds counterintuitive, but it is. We sit still to shake the tree. And I actually have an orange tree outside my window here, in the middle of Lisbon. I mean, really. Just on the street. I don't know. It doesn't look like the oranges are ripe exactly, but I doubt I'll be going out to shake it and having that for breakfast. But so, only you can know. You know, that to Buddha also, he said that to me. He said, don't take my word for it. Find out for yourself. It helps to hear the stories. It helps to have some indications. It helps to have an idea of where the path is and what how to walk on it. But you have to walk it yourself. No, you have to go aggressive yourself. And down it too, right? And that's the beauty of it. How beautiful. How beautiful that you have to do it yourself. And that's how you find yourself too, then. So I think I'll stop there. If anyone wants to share something, anyone wants to share from the Saturday group or from what I said today or whatever. Lisa.
Hello, everyone. Well, first, grasa is when I did my year abroad in university, so a long time ago. Grasa is where I lived, so it's a great neighborhood. So it's I have fun memories. I mean, yeah, it is not the place where people usually go. So it's yeah. Anyway, so enjoy. It's very nice. And the other thing, I have a question concerning the Healthy Boundaries workshop and the woman's what she said. The question is, do you know what you would have done differently, taking that into account?
What do you mean?
In the because she said the workshop wasn't well designed and it was only catered for white or people with power and not taking into account people like her. So
Yeah.
what was it in the course that didn't address it? And I'm trying to think of what we did together. And so yeah, what is it? And it's just to understand and what's my blind spot?
Well, I think what we've known in this course for a while that everybody's white, but that tends to reflect the Buddhist community at large. And we've tried very hard to find instructors that will teach it with us who are people of color or of different ethnic red people of color, basically. And we haven't been able to find anyone who's willing to do it or who has time for it or whatever. We also have no we know that the basic point is that so we talk about all these different aspects of power, and we don't emphasize, her feeling was, we don't emphasize the notion of white power, that we really don't even mention it. But we mention all these other aspects, all these other positions of power, teachers, parents, children, doctors, client, patients, all these different relationships of power. And yet we don't go into the other, racial, sexual we do to some extent, patriarchy, things like that. But, and so she has a point to on there, that she would like to have had more emphasis on that. And she felt that the reason that it wasn't there is because we aren't aware of it. We're ignorant, basically. To some extent, she's right. It's not something that I personally focus on. And I'm aware, and when she said that, I said, oh yeah, that's a blind spot. That's a big one, you know, that maybe I should look into more closely, to pay more attention to. So what, you know, what would we do differently? We've been trying to do differently by finding material around that issue that we can include in the course and attract participants who are from those communities, but it's hard to find them. And other people who have, for example, the Indonesian Dutch woman didn't have that criticism of the course. She shared her experiences of being that, but she didn't criticize, she wasn't angry at us for that. And she didn't feel like that was a shortcoming in the course. And we've had people of color in the class before, and they haven't brought that up either. So I think some of it is that individual woman's problematique, we would say in French, you know, her thing. So, and yet she made some good points. And she's probably suffered a lot of trauma around it. Stories she would tell of being projections onto Asian women in America, and men's projections onto Asian women, not being seen. And the ironic thing was that during the whole Zoom, she had her camera off. So it's almost as if unconsciously she was perpetuating the trauma of not being seen because no one could see her. Well,
hello, good evening everyone. Yeah, this description of this experience, your experience with the negative capabilities and putting yourself in a place where you don't know, allowing yourself not to know. Yeah, I was relating so much to my own experience with this new job that I have since last year as a teacher. I'm doing it again this year, and I could connect so much with the experience you were describing of coming to Portugal, and it really feels like allowing myself not to know, in the sense that we usually talk about. It's not knowing how to do stuff. That's it's not that. And it's really, and I always found it, I still do, less maybe, it's kind of, it's somewhat puzzling because it's something that I do with some difficulty, but there at the same time, it's, there's a lot of, I think I was mentioning this the other day, in some other way, there is some sense of joy in walking this path, you know, with each moment that I live, with each decision that I need to make, or you know, with every task that I need to organize or do, there is this sense of, you know, you're walking the path as you are, building it or something. I'm not sure. And there is this freedom in not knowing. And I also felt the same thing. You were talking about how we you know, it's very easy to get caught up in fixed ideas about things and how things should be and how things are not happening the way you think they should or they're supposed to or something. I was really caught up for a while in this, you know, when you're coming to Portugal, you know, I had all these, I was so trapped in so many ideas about how that should look like, what should happen. When I was able to see that, yeah, it's like this. The world opens or something. Can do now you can do anything. Now everything is possible. You suddenly, I'm so much, the actual reality, it's so much closer. I'm there right in the middle of it suddenly. So it's totally different. It's very creative. Yeah.
And in that release, there's great ease too. You know, but then it's like ease, you say.
Yeah.
Relaxation of something that we've been hanging on to.
Yeah. And it's cool, the experience, it's cool. I also feel the same. So thank you.
Risha?
Good evening, everyone. I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I'm going to make some reflections about this. Been said by João and Roshi. I did felt related to by the 21 years, and our stuff was so great, and the great unknown was no problem at all. By the contrary, it was a joy. Completely, and the freedom in that joy. But it immediately came up, but why is not that like that anymore? Why do I sometimes worry so much with the great unknown? And hearing about João talking about his new work, I don't have a new work, but I do love when my work is basically always the same, but sometimes I dive into unknown contractors and people, and there's a joy in that, especially when it's hard, and the unknown will ask for my abilities to connect with the people in that place that I really don't know, because I don't know them, never been there. And rules are different depending where you are. But still, I've dived into the great unknown this year, and I was completely sunk in agony and desperation, which was the rise of my debt in the bank. And I felt completely poor. No, I didn't felt, I was completely poor, and I didn't knew how was I going to handle that. And it was an unknown situation for me too, but it completely break me down. In a way, I didn't think it was possible. It was almost giving up energy. This is too much, I can't. But anyway, I was doing everything I could, and I knew, and the situation got better, and now I am completely different about it, because I solve it with the bank, with the work. I make whatever I had to do to make the situation better. But it wasn't positive. It's just that I'm reflecting on. Not as Roshi and João was telling, although I feel completely related when it's really a joy and a freedom. So then João talked about the path, and I think, and it started to come the equanimity concept we sometimes talk in Buddhism, not really in Zen, the Brahma Vitaras, or I think, but the in the sense of Zen, the ability to be equanimity, whether the not know wing is pleasurable or not. I don't know. That just wanted to share what it resonated in me. Thank you.
Anyone want to say something about your discussion on Saturday about the text? Just briefly, I don't know what came up or what. Teresa?
I don't know, but for me, it was really about the text pointing to, there was a phrase, I don't exactly know, this is simple it, as simple as this. They were talking about, the text was referring the sky, the stars in the sky, the dog barking away on the other monastery nearby. And it felt really almost bucolic, beautiful, and it's just this. But then we started to talk about war and the bad stuff. And for me, it was a bit like here, this kind of duality, I don't know, but it's simple this, if we, what I felt it was, if we act from anger, eager, or ignorance, if we kill, what happens is that people die, pointless, societies will get collective traumatized, and everyone is going to suffer until people can can, I don't know, clean the rage and whatever. But it's as simple as this. If we can commit ourselves to do this path, and now I think it's Zen, we can perhaps work from a greater clarity within ourselves, and the what is here and now, it's simple, this wouldn't be like is now in Palestine. I don't know, but resuming, as simple as this, it's not just pointing to good stuff. It is what it is. And it's simple. It comes from us and our actions.
Yeah, and I think that maybe we could say that when we have that experience of simply this, because that's what the Rinpoche points to this, to his student, simply this, and when we really have that experience, because then the student reflects and says, yeah, suddenly I had this experience of it was no longer, this is it and this is not. It was, he saw the empty nature of mind, as we say, or something like that. So it doesn't mean that we just have to accept everything as it is, but it changes how we experience things. When we experience that simply this, then it's like, okay, then we can see war in a different light. It helps us to see what the causes of it are and the consequences in a different way than if we were reading history books or something. It helps us to see, well, so what, pointing blame on people or social media or someone from one political party rather than another or something. It helps us to see the underlying causes of it all, and the consequences then that arise from those causes, which then helps us to experience those events differently and also move in the world differently, because that's what really matters. It's how we live this moment. And so, yeah, what you say is that it really is. And at the same time, yes, war is just this too, is simply this too. But it doesn't mean that we are okay with war. It's really, you know, we can hear that story, or we can hear what you've said, to what everyone has said tonight, and see there's a kind of what Suzuki Roshi called beginner's mind aspect to it, of the freshness, you know, of when we let go of what we've been hanging on to so tightly, it's really fresh and new. And experience, you know, I experience walking in the street differently. Even walking, you know, I have lots of memories in the streets of Lisbon. So I walked by a place where once Miriam and I stayed in a hotel, because Miriam came with me. We were going to a retreat. First, I think I had to give a conference at the Buddhist Union in Lisbon. And then we were doing a retreat somewhere. I don't know where, and I walked by, and that hotel is not there anymore. I couldn't even figure out really which. I know pretty much where it was, but it's not there anymore. Things change and we have memories, but I can also, within those memories and whatever, I can let go and just experience it. Oh, for what it is, the place where the hotel was. It's not even the place where the hotel was. It's the place where something else is. And if I can let go of the hotel, then I can just experience what's there now. I wasn't with Miriam. I've been thinking a lot about Miriam now, because Miriam loves Portugal and lived in Portugal and used to come with me to Portugal for like the first four or five years when I came. And some of you met Miriam like in those days. I'm not sure exactly who met her and who didn't, but so we're running out of time. We're not actually running out of time. It's just the moment calls for something else, so we can move on. So thank you all.
Amy, can I speak with you? Can I speak with you?